thank you again for listening to Boom Chuck, a Drummer's Podcast. I'm your host, Chris Phillips, and today I get to talk to one of my buddies that I met on the road. I met him at a show in Nashville when my band went and played there, and we kicked it off, stayed in touch, and I'm happy to have him on the podcast. Ladies and gentlemen, this is Kirby Bland. Thanks for joining me today, bud.
Yes, sir.
So we met, I mean, who knows when it was. It was before COVID.
I think it was 2019.
Yeah, I think so. My band had come out to Nashville to play with our buddies, Kid Politics, and you were just sitting in.
Oh, right? Yeah, that's right.
You were
I
just
forgot
sitting in.
That was, yeah.
Did you do one show with them or a couple?
That was the only show I did with them.
So funny. Yeah, they didn't have a drummer or whatever, and then all of a sudden they're just like, yeah, we got a buddy of ours coming up and playing, and that's how we met.
That's hilarious.
So I want everybody to know, obviously introduce yourself to the people. I want to hear the story of how, like, where you're from, how it all came to be, how did drums become the thing for you, and then ultimately moving to Nashville, touring, doing all this stuff. So give me that rundown, man. Take your time. Don't worry about shortening anything up. Just give me the rundown of everything that's happened from when you started growing up till today.
Life story.
Yeah, okay. Man. Go for it.
Oh, man. Well, it's music started for me with Keith Urban.
Yeah.
Keith Urban is, it's funny because, you know, in Nashville that there's the whole bro country thing and there's, you know, there's all kinds of music, you know, there's like non bro country. And when I talk to people about Keith Urban, they're at first kind of like, what are you talking about right now?
Yeah.
But it's true because if it weren't for that man and my mom introducing me to that man at a young age, he's the first person I saw on TV and said, that's what I want to do.
Oh, okay.
For forever.
Yeah.
You know, like just being on stage. So yeah. I started playing guitar when I was a kid, had some lessons. It didn't really hook on.
Yeah.
The finger shapes, I've got little soft
Same.
Fingers.
Yep.
I mean, and it's never worked, but I still wanted to play music. So a few years after that, I painted a house with my dad and my brother,
mm-hmm.
and I'm like 13 at the time. I got like $300 for it.
Nice.
And randomly woke up one day, went to a pawn shop and found a dusty old Ludwig in the back.
Oh, wow. Nice.
And it was like $350. And my brother came with me and talked him down. So I was able to nice. Get it. And yeah, and brought it home, and that was it. I mean, I'm self-taught. I haven't had I've had a couple lessons since I moved to Nashville, just for the hell of it.
Yeah.
Just like to like freshen some things up. But I pretty much just started playing that night.
Nice.
And YouTube was my teacher.
Yeah.
Finding drummers on YouTube throughout the years, just inspiring me and just watching. And then I'd go out to local shows in my hometown in Arkansas.
Yeah.
I'm from Fort Smith, Arkansas. That's where I'm originally from. And a small town, not a big music scene, but I'd go to the shows they do have and watch the drummer and really just try to soak in whatever was happening there.
Yeah.
And then throughout high school, I had bands. I had like punk bands. We'd go on the road and in a dirty old van and, you know, come back and, you know, nothing. And he was just like good first experience.
It's funny to hear that you like got into music for Keith Urban, but then in high school had punk bands.
It was crazy. Well, and I went through this whole country phase with the Keith Urban for years and years. Like I liked everybody and I still do. Like it's funny that it's full circle with Nashville because a lot of the songs we're playing like down on Broadway, I grew up listening to. I didn't even have to like learn.
Yeah. Right.
You know, it was just like, I know this song.
Yeah.
Like it's so I'm thankful for that, but yeah. And then I had my punk phase for sure and going and really just like a heavier phase. And it was somewhere around after high school when I graduated, I was sitting in a math class and they were probably talking about college or something like that. And I was just like daydreaming about touring.
Yeah.
It was literally like, just, I'm not going to college.
College wasn't it.
There's no reason I want to pay money to extend this high school thing I didn't really even like.
Right.
You know, and so I knew that I believed in myself at that point that I could play music.
Yeah.
But I didn't quite know how. And then it was just a couple of years later where some friends of mine were like, dude, you got to move to Nashville. I had a couple friends from Arkansas in Nashville and they were like, if you want to play, like professionally, like that's the first and hardest step.
Right.
And so it was that I just set my sights on it, and it happened for me. I was able to find a job as a valet driver.
Nice.
For years, actually, I held that job.
Yeah.
And a little $400 room in a house in Hermitage. And that was all she wrote. Yeah. Since then, I've been playing and just trying to play with everybody I possibly can. That's my goal.
I mean, you haven't been saying no to gigs, right? You're playing.
No.
If anybody asks you to play.
Unless I'm booked. Right. Yeah, unless I'm booked, I don't say no. Like, I've always worked on like a first come, first serve, just really simple. If the date's open and you ask me to do it, then it's yours, you know? And if there is a conflict, I'll usually defer to the first one.
Right.
Just out of courtesy, but, you know, obviously details are in there depending on what it is.
Right.
But
it's your job. So, yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
So when you made that decision to go, you didn't have any gigs lined up? Like, you just kind of found your way and figured it out?
Yeah. No. Well, I knew that, like, as long as I'm there,
yeah,
as long as I'm in the pool, then I can hopefully get a call.
Right.
So I just moved with the idea that as long as I can pay rent and whatever, so I'll work this valet job and get the tips and whatever. And it happened to be exactly like 2 weeks after I moved, middle of January 2016, I got this random Facebook message from somebody I didn't know.
Yeah.
His name was Jeremy Pearl, another drummer in town. And I had never met him at this point. And he was like, "Hey man, I just saw that you moved to town. I got a call for this 7 week run that I can't do. Do you want to do it?"
Okay. From all the drummers, how many drummers are there in Nashville that are like doing it? And you just randomly get a message?
For real. Well, I think I posted on like the Nashville Drummers Facebook page.
Yeah,
I was
okay.
Like, "Hey y'all, like, what's up? Like, I just moved to town or whatever." And he just happened to message me.
Wow.
And I called my job that I just started. And I said, "Hey, sorry, like, is it okay if I like duck out for a while?" And they literally said, "Come back when you want."
Yeah, they're probably. I mean, being in Nashville, jobs kind of have to be used to that sort of thing.
I didn't expect that at all.
Who was that run with?
His name is Wild Bill Ingram.
Okay,
he's a country artist down here. I don't know if he's still playing. I haven't seen him in a couple years, but it was basically like a traveling Broadway gig.
Right on.
We do like 4 hour sets in North Dakota.
Yeah.
And we're roughing it. Like it Hell was yeah. like the camping version of a gig, kind of like we're just doing it.
Yeah.
But it was great experience and I got to learn a lot of the standards.
But you were young and it was your first one, so you're probably like loving it. Like the fact that you were doing it.
I was going crazy.
Yeah.
I was
that's
going
cool.
crazy. Yeah. It was very cool. I'm very grateful for that. It's just about those relationships, man. It's just about people. Not that like, it's not like, what can you do for me? It's like, what can I do for you?
Yeah.
And how can, if I get called for something, like that's what Jeremy taught me on that very first week.
Yeah.
How can I get called for something and then say no to it?
Right.
If either I can't do it or I don't want to do it.
Right.
And then pass it on to somebody who can and
right.
will and will appreciate it and do a good job.
Yeah, yeah.
And that's just the whole network of musicians here in town.
Yeah. Yeah, because if you're the one guy that is saying no or doing all this stuff and not handing it off or like just helping,
right.
like the phone calls are going to stop real quick.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
Unless you're so good, but there's somebody else that's just as good. You know what I mean? And nice.
Yeah.
Right. So.
Right. Absolutely. Yeah. That's half the battle right there.
Well, and you mentioned like relationships. So we kept in touch a little bit. We'd go back and forth every now and then from when we met. And then I had Ben Satterly on here talking to him.
Oh, hell yeah.
And that was fun because that was me branching out from like outside of my quote unquote friend group. Cause I've toured enough tours. Like I know people to talk about drums and geek out. So that was my first, him and Scott Pellegrin were my first ones. Like I just Instagram messaged them and they were like, "Yeah, let's do it." And I was like,
absolutely,
kind of geeking out about it. But he said
That's
the same,
cool.
it's the same thing. Like it's all about the relationships. It's all about being nice. Scott, same thing. I mean, he's up in Michigan, not in Nashville, but like he's obviously it's Scott Pilgrim, so he's all over. But he's like his whole thing was don't be a dick. If you're a dick in the music industry, it's gonna fail you, right? Like
Well, you're spending so much time together, not even on stage.
Well, right,
and
it's just
like that. It's your coworkers, and you might be sleeping under them in a bus.
Right.
Like it's even closer than an office. And it's like you really have to. I think that's what it means when it's not for everybody kind of thing.
Yeah. Yeah. For sure.
You just really kind of got to get it or you don't, you know, but I mean, just be cool.
Yeah. Right. Just be cool.
Know? Yeah.
Well, that's the funny thing. So then I like mentioning Ben being on here, then all of a sudden you guys were like on Instagram Live and I was like, wait a minute. I know both of these people separately, and now they're talking to it. I mean, I get it. It's Nashville, right? So you guys are in the same town. But because did you guys know each other before that, or did you guys just kind of randomly had met?
Kind of. Like, I had seen – so Ben's from Oklahoma.
Right.
I'm from Arkansas. We're close stomping grounds.
Right.
I probably saw him once or twice in a show.
Yeah.
Around my town or something. He was playing probably like a Christian rock band or maybe even at a church.
Yeah.
And I had never met him formally, but I knew who he was when I moved to town.
Right.
And then when I moved to town, I guess it was just like a few years ago when we officially met. Probably just like a gear purchase. You know, we trade and sell back and forth all the time. I just sold him some congas and something like that. But then we were on the same date in Vegas with different gigs.
Yeah.
And so we were able to hook up and get some coffee and you know, yeah, dude. I mean, I didn't know him, but he's a great friend so far. Great, fantastic drummer.
Yeah, good dude. Yeah.
We talk a lot about the business, the ins and outs, the sucky things mainly because things are definitely shaky at some points and you don't know what you're going to do next and you kind of have to tread water and maybe like go get yourself another job. I was just before I took this interview, I was not on an interview, but talking about another job for the season just to pay the bills. Cause you know, gigs are not full time right now,
right?
COVID and otherwise.
Right.
So, but, man, Ben's a great dude.
The fact that you're self-taught and I get, like you said, you've taken a few lessons and then whatever, but I mean, you literally use YouTube, the songs that you grew up with, playing with music. You use that to quote unquote kind of develop the style of playing you do and you know, watching you, obviously you posted videos on, you know, online on Instagram, whatever. That is, it's cool to see you play because you're one of the drummers. And I noticed this even that night I met you, you're one of the drummers that feels the music, right?
Like,
you're not,
that's what it's all about.
Yeah. I'm a big dude. So like when I feel the music, there's not much movement. There's movement underneath, but like, I'm just kind of, and I'm also singing. So it's also like, I have to stay stationary, but there's a lot of, I mean, you can almost see the tempo just by the way you're moving back and forth. A lot of drummers don't do that. So if you know, when people are listening to this and check you out online, they're going to see like, oh man, like even if you're playing the simplest, like four to the floor, nothing country groove or whatever, you are in it from beat one till the end of it, which is great. I applaud you for that. I think it's great. But it allows the groove, it allows you to pull it back from the tempo, allows you to push when you need to push.
Yes.
And that's all something that you can't, like a teacher, and I find this as teaching, a teacher can't teach that, right? Like you've got to kind of have that mindset and really feel what you're doing with that sort of thing. Do you have any idea when that started kind of, when you're like, I don't want to say persona, it's just the way you play drums, but when did that start coming out? And like, you just finally like, you know what? I don't care what face I make. I don't care what this, I don't care what I look like. I just, this is the groove. This is how I get it. Yeah. This is how I'm going to make that sound come out. Do you have any idea when that started? Yeah.
Man, it's, I don't know when it started, but, connection with like watching YouTube to learn. I also made videos that don't exist anymore because they were on old YouTube channels and shit, but old covers and stuff. And I would show them to my friends and family and they would like really encourage the faces, especially they'd be like, oh yeah, I love that. Like they hadn't seen it before. And so I think in my mind, it was just like, all right, don't stop what you're doing.
Yeah.
Like, that's part of it right there.
Yeah.
As far as feeling the music, Nashville really did mature me because there were a few years before that. It was, I go look at those videos that are on YouTube now from like 6+ years ago. And I would say some of that's not there.
Yeah.
And it's just kind of being around better players is when it kind of set in and really listening to records. One of my good buddies in town, his name's Evan Hutchings. He's a session guy.
Mm-hmm.
And I've been meeting with him coffee like once a year, every year. And he plays on like in 5 different studios all week,
yeah.
like Monday through Friday on demo sessions, turning and burning.
Yeah.
And he always told me that he listens to records to play on records, how that, and it kind of got drilled in my head. Like, okay,
makes sense, yeah.
Someone calls me for a gig, a live gig, and they send me a produced record. I want to play exactly what that drummer is playing.
Right.
Fill for fill if I can. It's not, I can't, I'm not perfect with that.
Right.
Like I can't, you know, you make your own stuff, but you kind of within that, you learn how a song is supposed to feel and how groovy it is. And if you can put it into words, like, everybody wants to rule the world.
Yeah.
You
yeah.
know that tune.
Yeah.
I did a video, an Instagram video of that a couple of years ago. And as far as feel goes, it's kind of like tying an anchor to your kick drum foot.
Yeah.
It like basically you really just want to put yourself in, and when you're playing that song, you want to put yourself in the mindset of my foot is heavy and it's driving everything.
Yeah.
And it's kind of behind the beat. So you put it into words like that and you say, this is how I'm going to play this. I'm going to play it behind the beat with a heavy foot and the rest is going to come secondary.
Right.
And then you get into actually feeling the groove. And that's what in a live band setting, that I think is what drives the band.
Right.
So,
oh, yeah,
and that's a drummer's job, is to drive the band, drive the ship.
Yeah. Yeah.
And so it's just like, as the more you can do that, the better you're going to sound.
Yeah.
But I fully believe that the sound is in the hands, you know, gearheads. Sure. Are cool. I don't like being a gearhead because like I want a bunch of drums and
right.
I want a bunch of cymbals and a bunch of different options, but I've stuck with like 2 or 3 kits.
Right.
And it's like if you tune them the right way, you
yeah.
play them the right way, they're mic'd up in a session the right way, they can be interchangeable with stuff like that. So it's about the player, I think, in that point.
Oh, for sure. Yeah, you can make the worst drum set sound cool, you know.
Yeah, right, absolutely. And vice versa.
I remember doing the when Pacific first kind of came on the scene, I was working music retail and they had the easy kit. So it's a kit in a box, right? And we would just sell those over and over and over. Like, it was $199. So I mean, it wasn't the greatest thing, but we had to set it up for Christmas and like put it up there. And it was just, you could only play like a nasty, dirty shuffle on it because they had the crappy cymbals.
Oh,
or like,
you
could either do that or you could play like, I mean, just some like 60s, like funk, 4 to the floor, just like whatever. That's all you could play. That's the only thing that sounded like, that's kind of cool. But if you tried to play like some rock beat or something like that, up in Detroit, like obviously where my store was, everybody played some sort of metal or pop punk or whatever back then. You tried that on there, it was like, that sounds like pure garbage. The player, if you could, anybody could sit down and just try something and like play that specific way on the worst, I don't want to say the worst kit possible. They don't even make that kit anymore. But like, it literally was, you open the box, you put it together, there's your drum set. It was.
I'm gonna have to look up a picture of this because I've never heard of this Easy Kit.
It was literally called the Pacific Easy Kit, and again, they don't make them anymore. There's probably a reason. The hardware just kept. I mean, everything broke. It was like the thinnest metal, whatever. But I mean, I sold a lot of those things, and I mean, really, I mean, I'm not letting it out any trade secrets, but cost wise, I mean, every time we did that, it was like, I think cost was like $110. So we'd sell them for $199.
Oh, wow.
Right.
Wow.
So it's like, I mean, Guitar Dang. Center probably got them for like $70 a pop. Like,
yeah.
They weren't awesome. And I actually have the cymbals that came with those. I have them. They're like the worst.
Are they?
Like 12-inch hi-hats and a 14-inch little crash. But they, like, I've never sat down and recorded them. I've had, you know, like, teaching my kids and do it like, here, check this out. It's like, do you want to play these really nice hats that cost $700? Or do you want to play these that sound like crap? But
yeah,
that's kind of a, like, they sound like crap in a great way. So
absolutely.
It is the player.
That friend I was talking about, Evan, that's in sessions, I remember distinctly a few years ago. This is a big learning thing about gear. And I mean, he's got his like 70s broadcasters.
Oh, yeah.
All Sabian, you know, in probably something like, Blackbird Studio, like huge room, whatever.
Yeah.
And he's got clearly these 14-inch dented up CB hi-hats.
Oh my gosh.
Like off the CB kit, the ones that come with those.
Yeah.
And I asked him about that. I was like, what are you doing with those CB hats? And he was like, dude, they're crunchy and they work.
That's crazy.
It's like, it's probably some Americana something, you know, but I have a pair like that, have you heard of Beverly?
Beverly? No.
Yeah, I haven't either. They look vintage, but they're not. They came from my church. They're 14s and they are made out of like paper thin, whatever. And they're just ugly enough. They sound just ugly enough to be musical.
I always go back. Like, I remember Sabian a couple years ago launched the Big and Ugly line, right?
Yeah.
And it was such a great idea, but they tried to make Big and Ugly instead of just making a big, like, you know what I mean? Like, you can't force, you got to have a Beverly hat or you got to have what, I forgot what those are called, but like, you got to have those easy symbols. You can't make that stuff up. Really. I think Wuhan kind of does that in a great way. They're quick, machine stamped out, and you know, Wuhan and really Dream.
Yeah.
I know Ben's with Dream, Dream kind of does that too. Some of those lower end Dreams sound pretty cool, and they're just quick, machine stamped out, sent down the line. You know, like getting away from that handmade. I mean, I'm a Bosphorus guy, so my like hand make me all day. Like that's my cymbals, right? But when you kind of get some of those machine stamped, quick, like down the line cymbals, it's kind of like, okay, these are kind of great, like kind of thing. So
well, and it's weird. It's weird that cymbals are not cymbals specifically are not like all the same.
Oh
like,
yeah.
A 19 inch A crash and another 19 inch A crash can have completely different personalities.
Yeah.
And it's kind of like, dang, like that's why you got to go shop and see what you really like.
It's the worst. Yeah. It's the worst.
And it's not like it's the drum company's fault. I guess that's just the way the cymbal is. You know? Yeah. That's just like, that's crazy. Like,
I always look, like, obviously you have where you're at in Nashville, you have Forks and you have Nelson. They give you all these drum shops that like obviously are great there, but I've literally gotten to the point where I'm like, you know, if I can't find it here, I have a shop called 2112 here. If I can't find it here, I'm just gonna buy it on Amazon. And if I hate it, I just send it back. Like, and they don't Amazon doesn't care, right? Like, and sometimes you find a deal that way. That's my tip for the people that are listening. If you're thinking about a cymbal and you don't know, just get on Amazon. And honestly, get it on Amazon. If you didn't like that one, just order it again. And it's going to be a completely different cymbal when it shows up.
That's a good tip. I've
done that a few times. I've done that twice where it's like I bought like a 17-inch crash is this, it's too small for me. Like I'm 18 and above. Like that's all I can do, right?
Yeah.
And I remember I bought a 17-inch crash. For some reason, it was on like randomly Amazon weird super sale. So I bought it, got it here. It showed up dented. I think somebody dropped the box or at some point, just a little dent on the thing. And I hit it. And I'm like, man, that actually sounds really great. But I'm not paying for a dented cymbal, right? So I sent it back, said it was dented. They sent me another one. It sounded like crap. It sounded like crap. And I was like,
man,
it's the same cymbal. Like that dent almost made it great.
Yeah, it almost made it better.
And I just thought, I shouldn't have sent it back. Or so I was like, should I even attempt to get another one? I didn't. I was just like, I'm over it. I tried the 17. Yeah. It's not going to happen. But yeah, so there's a lot of different ways you can kind of maneuver around getting the right cymbal. And shopping is obviously the only way to do it, but That's a good tip. Man. Go through Amazon. Then, you know, if you got Prime, just send it back. Except you got to make, you got to be careful, because I feel like someday they're going to be like, you are not allowed to send anything else back. I'm like,
oh gosh. Oh,
that would be awful. Anyway, we kind of led into it a little bit. Let's talk about your gear. So you have, like you said, a couple kits going through cymbals. What is your, start from like your go-to, the kit that is yours that you're never going to change, never going to get rid of, that usually goes out on tour with you, best sessions. I noticed that you're always posting Ludwig, seem to be a Ludwig guy.
Yes, sir.
Do you have an official endorsement with them or not?
I do not. They're such an iconic brand that they're not just going to let any Joe Schmo, you know, be on their roster. So I'm not like in a super hurry to get an official endorsement, but because I've kind of accepted now that if I just play Ludwig drums for 20 years, that will be the endorsement. Like, I mean, I haven't switched it up.
Right.
And I just, it's a sentimental thing because I did start on Ludwig.
Right.
It was a plywood kit. It was basically like, I don't know what the official name of it was, but like a junior kit almost, but a full size still. I still have it actually in the back, but.
You still have that same, you still have that same kit that you bought at the pawn shop?
Yeah. Yeah.
Nice.
Hell yeah.
That's awesome.
Yeah, my parents are like, you got to keep that.
So, oh, yeah, for sure.
I tried to sell it a few times, but it's like, no, you're going to keep that.
Nice. That's funny.
But really, I have not met a Ludwig drum I don't like.
Yeah.
I really, snare drums, kits. So snare drums, Acrolite is the go-to.
Right.
Always.
Sure.
It can be, I'm using it in a rehearsal today. As like a low kind of tubby snare, which I haven't used it for in a while. I usually have it cranked, but Acrolite, and then a classic maple is your wood snare.
Yeah.
And if you want like a beauty or a copper, like, I mean, there's all the things you need, right?
Yeah. There, yeah. Right.
Under one umbrella. And so the kit I use on the road is actually kind of a, not an anomaly, but I've never seen anybody else with it.
Mm-hmm.
It was a Craigslist find. It's called a Ludwig Epic Mod.
Okay.
So have you seen like the pictures? It's a small kick drum.
Yeah.
It's like a pancake kick drum.
Yeah.
It's a 20x8.
Yeah.
And I have two identical ones. So like, imagine if it's set up like a double bass kit.
Oh yeah.
And then, it can do that. But the other one, it's kind of a spare, basically.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
At this point. Because the one with the Power Stroke 3 on the batter side, it's perfect.
Right.
Like, I mean, I've used that in big rooms and small rooms, and it translates the
That's
way it's
cool.
supposed to.
Yeah.
And then that there's just a 12-inch tom and a 16-inch tom with that.
Yeah.
And that's what I've been using, like, on the road with Daniel. And like you just over the past probably couple years, like the little small kit, but I had a couple of classic maples in there somewhere, like full size 22 kick drum kind
of
thing.
Right.
Which I'm not against. I just, you know, the small one is working right now.
Right.
I only have one other kit at this moment, and it's my 70s Rogers.
Oh yeah.
And it's pretty much stays at home.
Yeah.
I record with it.
Is it a Holiday?
I think it's later than a Holiday.
Oh, okay.
I think it's a 70s, whatever that is. I don't know the model name right now, but I'll send you a picture.
Yeah, yeah, for sure.
But it's I think it's like 74, 75, something
like
that.
Oh, right on. Nice.
It's got 12, 13, 16, and 22. And that is just, that's like my dream. I would say that's the one I'm never going to get rid of.
Right,
that's the one, like, I just get so many compliments on when I bring into sessions and stuff. And it's just like, that's the bread and butter right there.
Yeah. Yeah. I got to ask you about, so you play, you're not afraid to play percussion, which is great. I'm the same way.
Yes.
I'd rather play percussion than drums.
Almost always, man. I've always said if I could fudge my way into a full-time percussion gig with the drummer, I'm done because it's all creativity.
Oh, dude.
It's literally like, I love playing the drums, but you have a certain responsibility when you're playing the drums.
Yep.
To drive that band. But when there's already a guy doing that, but you're still adding it, it's just your job to add color at that point.
Right. Oh yeah,
And it's so much fun.
If I could go out and just, you know, have a spot on somebody's bus. And all I do is I'll even set up my own gear and I'll do backgrounds. I was just like, if I could go do, you know, larger venues and have it be a really fun, like creative thing for a couple hours. Like, dude, I'm sold.
I'm so jealous of the whoever they have. I don't know his name. They have the Eagles have a young guy that does, he switches. He'll play drums when Don Henley is singing.
Yeah.
And then Don Henley will go back to play drums and he'll jump on percussion.
Right.
And I'm like, where will
when
this job came open?
Right.
Because that is right up my alley.
Yeah, like, that'd be perfect.
Just, that would be crazy.
What, because you have an old, what are the bongos, congas and bongos, you have a set that you've posted a couple of videos and stuff on. What kind of drums are those?
So the congas are, I do a lot of stuff on Craigslist. Years ago, I drove to Chattanooga to get these congas, this pair of congas and bongos, matching bongos for like $100.
Yeah.
From a dude that didn't want them anymore. And it was a great deal.
Yeah.
And they're just Toca Synergy.
Okay.
They're like entry level.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know, and the bongos are LP, but those are just a friend of mine that I use. But I just really casually kind of acquire percussion gear.
Right.
I have a little foot tambourine that I like.
Oh yeah.
I like to run like a splash maybe, and a sizzle cymbal, whatever.
Yeah. Yeah.
But I have a moderate percussion setup.
Yeah.
I wish I could play it more in more situations.
Right.
Yeah.
I know. I always feel like by the time I'm done, and like I do the gig, my hands, like I've built up my calluses again. My hands have stopped hurting. I don't do it enough. And then all of a sudden it's like, oh, can you play percussion? And I'm like, oh, yeah, great. And then I start playing. It's like, oh, my hands.
I used to percussion tech, actually, for Kenny G's percussion player.
Yeah.
And he would, first of all, his setup was like double mine.
Well,
and
yeah.
He's a professional. He'd play a lot harder.
Right.
But he would definitely tape up this part of his hands
before
every show. And just, I've been thinking about doing that.
Things like that, to you don't think of like just a little bit of tape, or I was never the guy to wear drummer gloves. I remember buying a pair when I was a kid learning. I was like, I just can't do it. But then they don't make percussion gloves. You know what I mean? And really, that's what you need it for. I remember going maybe
a good idea.
Maybe I just thought, take it and just, you know, credit me later. I always thought, I remember playing, there was a band, this was a local band back in the day, and they had one song that they always wanted me to play a djembe on, and I never mic'd. So I was like, okay, I just walk up and strap it on, and it was just, you know, I was like a foot taller than all of them, and I was playing, and we all went to high school together, and I just remember, like, I'm not mic'd, and I'm going through, like, this giant Marshall stack, this huge 8x10 Ampeg, and this dude's five-piece kit with a million cymbals on it, and I don't have a mic. And I'm just, I've either already played or I'm going to play next. I'm just crushing my hands. So if I played after them, it was a nightmare. My hands were bloodied and raw, and I'm sitting there like, what do I do?
My God.
Yeah, so it was always a nightmare. We used to play shows together all the time. I always be like, hey, if you guys play last, then I can save my hands. Everything will be fine. But yeah, I remember doing that on the old Remo, like the classic Remo djembes back in the day. And it's funny how now that things have come up, like they're a little bit louder, but man, the one I had was just so, it was almost muffled. Like it was like so hard to get some sound.
Well, did it have like an actual hide on it?
No, it was the fake one. It was the Mondo head or whatever.
Okay. Because I played, my first djembe experiences were at a church, and it had an actual hide on it.
Oh, well,
And you're talking about muffled. It was like...
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Like, there was no crisp at all.
There was no pop in any way.
No, it was basically all bass.
The one I got now, I'm looking at it, it's like, oh, man, the one I got now, it's like all synthetic. But, man, I hit that thing, and it's like the whole house goes, pung. Like, it's like...
Yeah,
I can play that in a stadium, and you're gonna hear it. It's gonna be great. So
yes,
I was like,
absolutely.
To save my hands, I'm all into that. What kind of sticks do you usually go for? What kind of sticks do you usually play?
Big Firth.
Okay.
5A wood tip.
That's like and all around. No matter what you're playing, that's what you're going with.
That's what I have gone with for a while.
Yeah.
I like to sit close in.
Yeah.
Like a lot, you know, a lot of drummers like to do that thing and whatever. Like I think Vader is one of them that's like
a little bit longer.
A little longer, yeah. And I just like the shorter, more intimate thing. And I decided a long time ago that I didn't like nylon tip.
It was
just like, what is the point of this extra weight and this extra sound? And
right. Well, like, if you're not playing metal, if you're not playing metal, who cares?
Totally. Right. Yeah. Yeah. But yeah, man, there's sticks are that I'm pretty much set on those right now.
Yeah.
I really liked the Vader Hickory. Those were cool because those are really light.
Yeah.
And I like that, but they were so light, they broke a lot.
Yeah. Last question about gear.
Sure.
I saw a post that you were trying out a new Remo head. Do you play? I mean, I guess your pick. You Vic Firth is a classic stick to use. Obviously, Ludwigs are classics. I mean, across the board. Are you a Remo guy? Or are you kind of going back and forth or whatever? It's the cheap point at that point. I mean, what do you find for your kits to be that head that gives you that tone you were talking about?
Yeah, definitely Remo. I think a lot of drummers and a lot of musicians will say this. I'm definitely like OCD about the brands.
Yeah,
big time. For sure, especially the ones you're looking at right then and there, you know, you're using all the same.
Yeah.
I've never really gotten along with like Evans. And I had a few Aquarian like Super Kicks back in the day. Those were kind of cool.
Right.
Coming to Nashville and playing like professional country music, what started it all was the Power Stroke 3.
Of course.
Remo.
Right.
Coated on the kick drum.
Yeah.
It's just everything I ever wanted from a kick drum sound when I heard that.
Yeah.
And so since I discovered that head, I kind of have been around Remo looking, experimenting with like things on the toms and the snare. I usually just do like something like an Emperor on the snare.
Yeah.
Maybe an Ambassador, but usually like an Emperor for durability.
Yeah, I was gonna say.
And then on the toms, I'll do the Ambassadors for sure.
Yeah.
Get that ring, get a little bit more of a vintage jazzy kind of thing going on.
Yeah.
I
don't know, man. Those new vintage Emperors. I love
those are Mac Daddy.
Yeah.
For sure. I even love, I'm a big fan of Pinstripes. I mean,
really? Yeah.
Pinstripes was what came on my first kit.
Yeah.
And it was just like, it's kind of a cheap head as far as like, there's nothing super special about it,
but that's what you learned on it. And how much time did you spend making that drum set sound great?
Hearing those pinstripes and being like, why does that not sound good?
Yeah.
Like, and it's just like, but you put a pinstripe now on a good drum, you tune it right, it sounds fucking great.
Yeah.
That might change, you know, all this might. I'm curious if any of this changes in 10 years, you know.
You never know, right?
But,
The next big thing, like, who knows? Evans could come out with something, Aquarian could come out with something.
Absolutely.
You never know.
It really is not about the brand at that point. It's about, you know, the best product.
Absolutely.
What sound, and so I kind of lean towards more timeless things like Ludwig.
Yeah.
And like Zildjian.
Yeah.
Kind of. I've heard a lot of good things from a lot of different brands.
The last 15-20 years, the technology behind just the drumming world has skyrocketed. And Ludwig has stayed, Remo has stayed, but they've also done the Atlas stuff that they do. Like, everything's skyrocketing. And like, everybody, even the handcrafted, like mom and pop, like even like companies like ANF and like all these other people that are making drums, the boutique shops and drum makers, like, dude, all that stuff. Everybody makes a good drum. Everybody does.
Yeah.
Even though I'm a Yamaha guy, Yamaha makes the best. But to me, I'm Yamaha's like, awesome. Like a Pearl, like whatever is going to be amazing. Pearl Masterworks kit is amazing. And they're signing people left and right. But it's like, they're making great drums. They always have. Ludwig's making great drums. They always have. Yamaha, Sonar, all the Premier. Like, people are, everybody makes great drums. You know what I mean? They make some crap drums too. But I don't know. Like, even it used to be, I mean, growing up, it was like there was some good companies, there was some bad companies. Like, even, dude, Mapex. Mm. Mapex is making great drums. And back when I was up and coming, they were the ones that were kind of like, this is the cheap drum that, like, you it's like your highest end mid-level kit. And now they're, I mean, their drums are great. So
now that's a good point about the technology.
That's all it is, dude. Like, in Indie Drum Supply, like, they're out in Kalamazoo, Michigan now. The stuff that they're making, and like that you could, like, 3D print and, like, CAD stuff, like, you can do all this kind of different thing now. And it's, I mean, the metal works that are happening now within the percussion world, and even this, I mean, even cymbals, like, you're still getting the handmade Turkish everything. It's like, that's that, to me, that's where my ear still goes. But man, some of the stuff that they're coming out with now, and some of these technologies, even just taking that old traditional stuff and making it new with clap stacks and, like, all these other things, like, I mean, my boy Mike the Junk Hat, like, things like, well, who thought of a trash can lid and Mike Meagy, like, pulling this thing out?
Well, speaking of technology, I did want to mention one more thing, because I've been blown away by this every time I played one. But the WTS, man, the Welch tuning systems.
Yeah,
I was playing a gig in Nashville, and they had just put this new house kit in, and it was one of those kits. And I had never played one before.
That's a nice house kit.
right. It's at the 5 Spot in Nashville.
Yeah.
And it's still there. I saw a buddy play it the other day. And oh my gosh, I was like a kid in a candy store. I felt like I just started playing the drums when I played these drums.
Wow.
Because I had this, like, 10-song set, and I would detune the toms after one song.
Yeah.
In between. And the next song had a completely different vibe.
That's crazy.
And it was just, like, so quick. And I did it with the kick drum a couple times too, to get a snappier and then a lower. And it was just like, man, like, this is cool. Like, I really like this. Whoever came up with this.
For a studio setting and, like, quick, like, fine tuning and all that, it makes it so much. If you don't know what you're doing, though, it could be a big disaster. But I'm excited to see more and more of that coming in. And then there's the new thing, the what's it called? The Zit kit or something like that. And, like, you can, like, make your one snare be a 12, a 13, or a 14. Have you seen that?
No.
Yeah.
I'll
send it to you. I think the British drum company, or they're affiliated with the British drum company. They literally, you drill it into your snare drum, and it just takes another layer and pops it up. So when you play, you can turn your 14-inch snare into a 12-inch snare, like nothing.
Wow.
And you hit a switch and it goes to a 13. You hit a switch, it goes to a 14. It's crazy.
Cool.
And they work. Like, things like that is, like, I'm excited as we keep going and going and going. I'm so much more excited. Even though we still have the traditional, I'm a Bosphorus guy, like, that stuff is still hand cranked out by dudes. And it's like, that to me still is classic. I mean, it's old traditional ways, but, like, they now have a clap stack. They're doing, I mean, they're putting holes in everything. Nobody did that back in the day. Nobody put holes in cymbals back in the day. And now it's like holy chinas and effects cymbals and stacks. Like, everyone's doing it, but it's still made a certain way, which I love and appreciate still that. So
that's great.
That's exciting. Yeah, the Welch tuning system is so cool. I remember seeing that when it first came out and just like, that's never going to catch on. But then they redefined it and did all these things, and it's like,
it wasn't until I played a gig on, I kind of had the same idea. I was like, I mean, whatever, it's kind of cool.
Yeah.
I think I played one at NAMM maybe.
Yeah.
And literally when I played an actual gig, it was sold. I was blown away. I mean, like, this is really cool.
for a snare, dude, it's a genius idea.
Oh, yes. Oh, yeah.
Just the whole kick, I mean, the kick, it could all fall apart if you don't know what you're doing. I'm just going to say that again, because I'm going to detune this kick, and it's like, oh, dude, tune that thing
for
back
sure.
up. So you gotta be careful with that. So I want to go through real quick too, like, you just quote unquote retired from a band, or you took a step back from a band. You're playing. Yeah. I mean, so you're a working drummer in Nashville, but you're actually a working drummer in Nashville. Just on your Instagram, I got it pulled up here. JD Clayton, Hippie Speedball Band, Adam Cunningham, and Barrett Babber, and more. It says, right. So like you're working a lot now. Are you still kind of, those are the bands that you're still kind of doing stuff with? I know you just said you took a step back a little bit, obviously with COVID. Yeah. Things changed, but I mean, you're still getting after, man, it a lot.
Yeah, dude. You know, things are definitely shaking up quite a bit. It's a transition period. I just spent the last, I'd say about full year with Daniel Donato.
Okay.
Super awesome.
Yeah.
Country guitar picker. Yeah. Here in Nashville. We toured everywhere all summer. And it was really, really fun, but it just kind of, the end of it didn't really work out for me as like me and my business.
Sure.
And that's okay. There was nothing going wrong. It was literally just a business thing.
Yeah.
And it was, so I had to step back from that. And that took me away from some of those bands you listed.
Yeah.
But a lot of those bands, because of COVID, aren't really working anyway.
Yeah. Right.
So Daniel was keeping me the most busy for sure.
Yeah.
Yeah, actually behind me here, that's Adam right. Yeah. There on that head. He's one of the first guys I met in town, singer, session singer.
Yeah.
Outlaw country Stapleton type.
Yeah.
Love it. We'll go up to Iowa and play his home state every year, 4th of July kind of thing.
Mm-hmm.
Barrett is from Arkansas as well.
Okay.
He's a singer-songwriter in town. Yeah. Mostly. He's had a couple songs go out to artists and do things that way. But yeah, when he does tour and have a live band, it's me and a couple more buddies of his.
Nice.
For sure.
Cool.
And then JD, man, he and I knew each other since we were little.
Really?
I'm really excited for the future with JD because, we've been playing, he's from Fort Smith, went. Yeah. To the same church as I did when we were kids.
Nice.
Grew up in high school together. And I don't want to say he followed me out here, but he kind of did.
Right.
When I came out here 2 years later, he was like, all right, I got to go try it.
Yeah. Know? Why not? Right.
See what's up. And man, we're doing it. We're hopefully have some dates in November and December, some tour dates.
Yeah.
That's like some really nice Americana country kind of chill stuff as well.
Yeah.
But man, and the and more thing is, anybody who call, I get strangers calling me all.
Yeah.
The time.
Yeah.
Being like, I got your number from so and so, can you do this next week? And I'll say yeah or no. I'm a plumber, man.
You have to call me
to fix your toilet. I'll come over to fix your toilet. You give me a check and I'll go home.
Yeah.
And it's like I ain't got no reservation on who it is. You.
Yeah.
Know, it's just like, if you need a drummer and you trust me to do it, then
well, and you're doing and you're doing session stuff too, like, right? Don't you have a little. Yeah. Space that you can literally just be like, hey, send me the song, I'll play drums on it. I mean, you're
totally,
one.
Yeah.
Of those guys as well, which is great. I wish I could do that more.
I wish I was doing it more too, honestly.
Yeah.
That's a little harder to find because I've probably got like a couple producers around town that know I do that and.
Right.
Will occasionally send me like a song, and that it might not even be drums. Like I've got a xylophone right here at one time.
Nice.
last year I was doing like three xylophone sessions.
Really?
Where
that's
I was
cool.
Where I literally just added like simple little parts and sent it off to them, and it was cool. So like, you know, I love touring. Like that's what traveling is, why I do it.
Yeah.
Really, like if you could take music out of the equation, and if I was just getting paid to travel somewhere,
right,
I'd be down, you know. But sessions are like, I think, the ultimate dream, like full-time sessions.
Right.
Because a lot of my favorite drummers here in town, like Chris McHugh and Evan.
Yeah.
And Seth Roush, my buddy, literally like all these big time guys have played on these records and they have these plaques in their houses.
Right.
And it's like, that's just so cool. You know, I don't have to be a part of the band.
Right.
Necessarily, but you know, if I could just be a part of music creation in that way.
Yeah.
All the time, that's.
Yeah.
Just, and I feel like that will progress me as a player farther than other.
Yeah.
Things.
Yeah.
You know, like farther than just doing bar gigs, you know, like,
right.
'Cause you have to focus, you have to really practice and hone in your tones and stuff like that. And so that's like what I like to do the most. But it's everybody, man. It's just, it's, you need a drummer in this crazy town where there are 1,000 drummers on the same street.
Yeah.
And you pick me, like, it's all right. Yeah. I'll play. It doesn't matter if it's jazz, country, rock, brushes, sticks, percussion. It doesn't, it's whatever. Man. Yeah. Like,
that's what you got.
I feel so grateful. So
that's how you got to be, though. That's how you got to, I mean, you're killing it. And that's how, that's what you have to do to survive. I mean, that's your job.
Yeah.
So the more you hustle, the better off you're going to be, right?
Absolutely, man.
All right. I want to talk to you about a couple more things, music related, kind of, but also not. I didn't know this until I started kind of looking through old Instagram posts, but. You were actually in Vegas when the Vegas shooting happened. Were you there as a spectator? You were there on tour with somebody, right?
We were playing, yeah. We were playing that day.
Okay, so yeah, I did an interview with a buddy of mine, Nate, who was on this, and same thing. It was a big thing for him, and he shared his story.
Man.
You don't have to get into crazy detail if you don't want, but I mean, I think it's great. To where, I mean, you're a survivor of that, something that was so integral. I'm not a country artist, but it still brought a huge light on the music world. I knew people there, not being a country artist.
Man.
I mean, I knew crew members in France. One of my buddies passed away in France when that all happened.
The Eagles of Death Metal?
Yeah, yeah. I knew Nick Alexander, the crew member that passed away. He toured with us. Yeah. So he was with Sum 41 when we did a U.S. tour with them. So it was a sad time, but it was like when things like that happen, the music community, you realize how small it actually is across genres, across whatever. If you don't mind, man, if you don't mind, just kind of, you don't have to relive the events or whatever, but what, how did your day go? What happened that day?
Man, I was playing in a band with, actually on the other side of this wall is my roommate, Greg, and, he's an awesome guitar player. It was with him and, some other people, an artist named Jordan Mitchell, and we were playing the side stage, not the main stage.
Yeah.
There's two stages, one at the front, one at the back. And we played the side stage at like 2 p.m., 30 minute slot, got off, and it was good. We were just hanging at the festival all day. So it was really chill. We were, drinking and partying and just watching music and eating food and whatever. And the day goes by, man. I am at this point kind of backstage on the front stage.
Yeah.
With my band and everybody hanging out while Jason Aldean's going on. And I decided I wanted to go out and see some of the show.
Yeah.
And out front. And so I broke away from the group and I went out front and into the crowd here. I was probably like halfway back about where front of house is.
Sure.
And watching the show, watched a couple songs. I'm not a big fan of Jason Aldean. So I was like, all right, I've heard this before on the radio. I'm going to go and get myself a snack. So I start walking back towards the back of the venue, away from the main stage, where like the snack bar is or whatever. And I get myself a little snack and I start to go sit down in the green room. And all of a sudden, as soon as I sit down, you hear like just fireworks. And I was like, man, the show's not over. Like the show just started. Why would there be like fireworks? And I went and opened the door and the only thing I heard, there was no music. It was so eerie. It was like, I went into this room, there was music outside. And then seconds later, I opened the door again and it's totally silent and people are screaming.
Wow.
And there's like, I heard a police officer say, I didn't see him, but all I heard was, that is machine gun fire. Run.
Wow.
Run away.
Jeez,
and
man.
So I got caught up in a river of people.
Yeah.
Like I literally just beelined the exit, dropped my bag, everything, had my phone in my hand that was about to die.
Yeah.
And just started running away. I got out of the festival grounds. And I had to go through like the back of the Flamingo Motel with a bunch of people. I ended up 3 miles away from the festival grounds, just kind of waiting. Uber was down, obviously. All that stuff was in crisis. So there were a bunch of people just holed up at this gas station. Just like if you go into a gas station and you have like the refrigerated doors, people are just sitting with their backs against it, like lined up.
Wow.
And some people are bloody. Some people are, it was pandemonium. It was crazy.
Wow.
It was wild. I was finally able to get back to the Airbnb and they were all there and we all had a nice little reunion. We were stuck there for 5 days, man. Because it was a crime scene. Our van was there on the grounds and we couldn't move it for 5 days and it was just this whole thing. So we were able to enjoy Vegas a little bit afterwards.
Sure.
But it was life changing to say the least.
No, absolutely. Any event like that. Yeah, yeah. That's crazy. And it's always good to, I mean, thank you for sharing. It's always good to have, you know, just some, obviously then with COVID hitting and you know, that's big festivals like that, even though they are happening again, like there's always that rando weird chance, you know, and it's like
weird.
It's having now two. And I know more than two that just from Vegas, it's like, it's crazy. I mean, think like you ended up 3 miles away. Did you even know that you went 3 miles until you were like, what the heck?
It was one of those, it was the first time in my life that I ever felt like that my legs were moving in survival mode. It was I was running and I was so out of gas and out of breath, but I was, my legs were still, I looked down and my legs were still moving and it was like, fuck, like just get out of here, get out of this vicinity.
That's crazy, man.
If I had lingered in that spot in the crowd for like 10 more minutes, I might not be here. Like, right. I think about that all the time, because if you just look at a map, I can point out like where I was and where the shots were fired. And it's like, that could have been the end.
Right.
Like it's heavy to think about, but I think about it often because it's important.
It's a good, I mean, but, in some ways it's a good reminder of like, it wasn't your time. Yeah. It wasn't your time. So you're still here to do something. That's good. So
absolutely.
Man, that's crazy. I thank you for sharing that, man. We can get off top. I mean, it's always heavy when you go to things like that, but you came through it, you survived. Yeah, you're part of it. It's part of your life story, which is what we're here to talk about, which is good. So I did notice you did post, and I wanted to ask you about it. You had surgery.
Yeah.
When was this? Was this was during COVID, right? 2020 or 2019?
Yeah, this was this year. This was February.
Yeah. So you explain to me what it was, because you were having migraines on a daily basis. What was that? What was exactly going on here?
For years, like if I would cough too hard, mm-hmm. or if I'd laugh too hard, or if I'd pick up something heavy really fast, I'd just get this head rush, and more than a head rush, like a head rush that would last for 15 minutes, completely debilitate me, you know. And
the three things you just described: coughing. Well, when we're out on the road, you get sick. Or you get whatever, you're going to cough. Lifting heavy things, you're a drummer, for crying out loud, and laughing. Yes. It's like, obviously, when you're on the road and you're with a bunch of goons in a van, you're going to laugh.
I was sitting on my couch having some coffee in the morning, and this orange couch right here. And I got up from it kind of fast and immediately like had to go right back down.
Wow.
Because like, it kind of like an old woman, like my mom will do sometimes. And it's like, I'm 26 years old. Why in the world can't I get up from a couch fast? So I got an MRI at Vanderbilt and they were like, my skull is a little bit too small for my brain. So it was compressing the back. Like, this is the front, this is the back.
Oh, wow.
It was compressing the back of my brain up, which was causing these headaches.
Wow.
And like if you can imagine like a hernia, you cough and you laugh, it's going to pull the brain down a little bit. And that's where that came from. Right. So what they did is they went in there and they took a little piece of my skull back here out.
Yeah.
And it basically all the components just kind of floated back up into place. And now when I cough, when I laugh, they doesn't pull down anymore. And wow, so I don't get the headache.
That, have you gotten I mean, that obviously not, you do get headaches, you know, whatever, but that solved that issue.
Oh yes. Oh
was
yeah.
Was it like immediate? Like obviously when
miraculous.
Yeah, obviously like when you heal and things happen, but like, did you like cough or lift something up and you're like, oh, or get up off the couch and you're like,
absolutely.
Wow,
I remember
dude.
I remember the first time that happened. It was like maybe just a few, like 4 weeks after.
Yeah.
And I was, I don't know if I was smoking a cigarette or what, but I was like coughing my lungs out.
Right.
And I expected the worst and nothing happened.
That's crazy.
And it was like, holy crap.
That's amazing.
That's how
dude.
That works. Wow. So, and that was my first surgery ever. So it was just, I had no expectations. And, but I was happy that he'd do it here in Tennessee and I got to recover here at home. And it was during COVID. So I didn't miss out on a lot of work.
Good time to do it. Right.
Yes, absolutely.
Wow, man. That's crazy. It's insane how, I mean, at least you figured it out and didn't have to go through multiple like steps.
Well, I kind of did over the years. I went to a few doctors. Yeah, okay. Kind of like, hey, or take this pill.
Yeah.
But I didn't. That's you don't understand. It's not. Yeah.
Right. Yeah. It's not a pill thing. And also, I don't want to get hooked on opioids. Thank you.
Absolutely. Yeah. Well, and it was to the point where I was taking ibuprofen every day, and I was like, this can't even be good. Like, gosh. Yep.
Wow. That's nuts. I'm glad you're better. You can give us more music. That's
Thank
good.
You. Yes, sir. Me too.
Last question for you. Okay. Are you still rocking the Crash of Doom as your ride as much as you did before?
Absolutely.
You know,
dude,
so
I love it.
The backstory for the listeners, the backstory on this is the day we met, you used my kit. So you used, I think you used I Am Dynamite's kit. You know, it was four piece, 2012, 16, you know, standard, whatever. And you brought your own cymbals. Cause you know, when I let people use my kit, I'm always like,
I remember you made that exact face.
Yeah, I was like, all right, you're not going to hit it. Yeah, you're not going to hit it as hard as me, but just try not to break anything. You know, whatever.
Yeah,
and
yeah,
I mean, we just met, so I was kind of like, okay. But so you put the Crash of Doom, which I at that time I had a Crash of Doom, and you put it up, and I'm like, what are you doing? Like, what are you? I looked at you like, what is wrong with you? It's just like the thinnest cymbal with the smallest bell. And I was like, why are you doing that? And you just looked at me. And you just started playing this groove with a smile on your face. And I was like, you didn't answer my question. But
that's funny.
Since you played the whole show with it, I listened to it, everything, it sounded great. Again, this goes back to what we talked about earlier. Like, sometimes it's the player. I don't think I could play a Crash of Doom as a ride. But since then, I talked to my buddy here, Alex Jolly, who he actually just ordered a 22 Crash of Doom and has been using that as a ride.
Funny.
And it's the same. He literally was just like, he gave me that same. I asked him about it. I told him about you and our experience. And he literally goes, it's a great cymbal. It's a great cymbal. And it
so
works
versatile.
For all. It works for everything. And he's playing like pop punk. I think he's in a pop punk band. He's in a math rock band and an alt rock band and a singer songwriter band. So he's doing all this stuff here in Raleigh. And like, I mean, he has rides and he fluctuates. But he was like, yeah, I can always rely on the 22 as a great ride. And I'm sitting there like, I don't understand.
But I mean, I'm sure the bell on the 22 is even better than the I have a 20, so
right.
It's ever since I discovered that cymbal, it's like, this is also a cool ride. I either have it in two places. I either have it in the ride position or my left crash.
Right.
And I will use it as a crash, but I'll also use it as a ride, do this thing.
Right. Right.
I like that a lot.
Yeah.
And it's shimmery, but you can, when you start to wash on it, it gets really dark.
Yeah.
It's like shimmery and then dark and then the bell cuts. And I used it a lot with Daniel because, it's a lot faster music. It's just like, we're pushing 200 BPM a lot, like 180, 170. And there's a lot of give to it. My other ride is the 2017 Avitus.
Yeah.
The remake of the old style that Zildjian did. And that's like my go-to for most music, but it doesn't have as much give as the Crash of Doom does. And it just doesn't respond as well to the stick and pushing into it and stuff. And so that all those are the reasons I like to use it as a ride.
Yeah. Yeah.
It's just like, it's so, it just feels good under the stick. I think I feel that way about most of my gear, the reason I use most of my gear is that it feels good under my feet,
right,
under my stick, that kind of thing. Because if I'm getting a lot of pushback, I'm just not gonna be into it.
Yeah, you know?
Not gonna be able to dig in and whatever. But
yeah,
that's like my favorite symbol of all time. Is ratchet.
And you know, it's funny too, because I mean, do you only have the one that you use?
Yeah, I only have the one. Yeah.
So I've had several throughout the. I don't know why. Like for some reason, at one point I had two. They sounded completely different. And I was like in a studio kit. It was before I was with Bosphorus. And it was like I had them. I liked one. I didn't like the other one. So I sold the other one. But I had two guys interested on reverb. So I was like, I'll just get rid of them both. But then I ended up getting the Bosphorus Groove Crash, which is pretty much not the exact same thing. But it's pretty close to the same thing. So I have that space of where I needed it. And I love my Groove Crash. But in my mind, I'm like, man, the Crash of Doom is that classic, like, none of them are the same, and you can bend them and do whatever
right.
you want. It's like if you're always, you should be on the look all the time for if you're going to use it that much and do what you do, using it as a ride and washing it out, whatever.
Yes.
I mean, you don't hit that hard. You can, but you're a very controlled, accurate drummer because you're doing it. It's your job. Mm-hmm. You're doing it for a living. You've done it for so long. So when you're that way and you know how to swipe and you're not bashing stuff all the time, your cymbals are going to last a long time. But there's always that chance, right? Like somebody's going to knock
Absolutely,
over a cymbal.
Yeah.
I'm always like,
now I just want a 22. Now I just want to go find a 22.
Hey, you heard it from me. My buddy Alex, like, the 22. Yeah. I think what did he say? His girlfriend ordered it for him for his birthday or something like that. And he's like, it was, and he didn't pick, like, Zildjian just sent it. And he was like, the cymbal sounds great.
Wow,
like, so
great.
You could get a crap one maybe, but you never know, man. You should go up to one of the shops and just be like, can you guys order a 22 and just see what it sounds like? Maybe they will. But that's what I had. I appreciate you sharing all your the extra stuff, obviously the life stuff, the migraine surgery, the Vegas stuff. I mean, I could talk about gear all day. I know you could too. So I started this whole thing just so, like, you know, drummers talking to drummers is really what it
is. This is
great,
like,
Random things, like, no one has ever probably gone through, I mean, I don't say no one has gone through the surgery, but, like, I've never known anybody to have that issue and then get it taken care of. Like, that's crazy. But you made it, and that's good. You figured it out. You made it, and now you don't have to deal with it anymore. That's amazing. So that's great.
That's what I you know aim for, man. Yeah, it's I'm an open book when it comes to life. You know, I think music will do that to you.
Sure.
When you do it for a living and you do it often, like, you kind of just subscribe to that lifestyle. You know, I don't see a reason to have any secrets or anything like that, you know, like, well, it's just what it is.
It's
know?
Part about also, like, being kind, like, you know what I mean? There's some people that you don't have to open up to whatever, but, like, you know, if you're a standoffish human being that doesn't share and doesn't whatever and, like, can't be friendly, that's the big thing.
Right.
It goes back to that first initial conversation we're having, is just, like, the jobs are going to dry up for you. You know, like, you're not going to be called if you're not a personable human being, you know? So
yeah, man,
I guess,
like, I said that's half the battle. It's
right.
It's part of it. Some people haven't grasped that part of it.
People go on auditions, you know? And they walk in and they go, nope, like, you can play all you want, but nope, like, it's like, you look like
absolutely.
A jerk, you know, kind of thing. Like, your Instagram, so people can look you up, is just at Kirby Bland.
That's it. Yeah,
so you're always posting videos. You got all kinds of stuff. I'm looking at it right now. So you got, you know, your picture of your scar and your staples, which is great. So the people that love the gore, go look at it. I did that one time. I posted a thing. I was told I was having jaw issues. My jaw was out of line, and that's not good. You know, I was getting headaches, but for a different reason. It was because my jaw. And I posted, I'd done a surgery, my first surgery. So they basically said, oh, you have a deviated septum. Could have broke my nose at some point. Who knows?
Yeah.
So I went and got that corrected. Everything ended up being fine. And I was at a drive-thru. I was in between lessons. And I was like, oh, I'll just grab some food real quick. And I'm driving slow. I'm not supposed to exert too much. And I know there's a possibility something busting and me starting to bleed. So I'm in this drive-thru. And I kind of went, uh-oh. And I kind of sniffed a little bit. And my nose just started gushing blood, and I was like, oh shoot.
No.
So I pulled out of the drive-thru. For those that don't like TMI stuff, you can stop the podcast now, but yeah, I was going through the drive-thru, and I pulled off to the parking spot. I'm like, oh shoot. And I mean, I you know, I had surgery. So like I hadn't really, I wasn't fully recovered yet. It was like I don't know, 3 days after my surgery. So I was still kind of weak and had some blood loss and whatever.
Sure.
And dude, I started gushing blood. So I'm like, oh shoot. Luckily I was in my wife's car. And when I played football, the trainer literally had tampons for bloody noses. When guys would get a bloody nose, you shove a tampon. Wrestling,
yeah.
Like that's honestly, if you look at any kit on the sideline of any sports, there's going to be tampons in there just for that reason, for nosebleeds.
Yeah.
So I was in my wife's car and I'm rifling through everything. I was like, and I saw one and I shoved it up my nose to stop it. And I'm like, what the heck? Like, and I texted her. I'm like, hey, I'm in this parking lot. If I pass out, because I was getting like woozy, if I pass out from like blood loss, I'm here. She goes, call me in 5 minutes. So I shoved that up my nose. I stopped it, and so I'm like standing in this parking lot. My shirt's covered in blood. My hands are covered in blood. My beard is red, like all this stuff, and I have a tampon sticking out of my nose. And I'm like, oh, I can't go to my lesson. So I called and I was like, hey, I'm not going to be able to make it today. And everybody knew I had surgery. I was like, not going to be able to make it today. My nose started bleeding in the car. I was on my way. It's not going to happen. So everyone was cool with it. But I called my wife and I was like, hey, I am okay. I'm driving home. I had to drive home with this thing sticking on my nose. Took a picture on Instagram. I took a picture of like just me, like from like my eyes up. And I said, if you like gore, slide right.
So they
slid right, and it was literally my face with the tampon sticking out, covered in blood, and then it was like me doing this with my hands on my shirt, just covered in blood, and I was like, I guess I'm not fully recovered. And so I got a call from my mom. It's just like
everybody
was like, are you okay?
Is that place still up?
Oh yeah, it's still up.
Okay,
yeah.
I'm going to go find it.
Yeah, I mean, it was like I did the one. It was like you could just see the drips of blood. And it was like, I think I took the shirt one down because it was like chunky, bloody nose stuff. Well, I appreciate you again.
Yeah. Well, you have a good rest of your day. I'm about to head to Nashville right now and do a little rehearsal.
Right on. All right, buddy. We will talk soon.
Yes, sir. See you.
See you, bud. Thanks again to Kirby Bland for joining me on Boom Chuck, a Drummer's Podcast. You can check him out at Kirby Bland on Instagram. All of the bands that he performs with and everything are going to be on his links there. And he's constantly posting videos like we talked about and funny stories like we just ended on. I'm going to leave you guys with a song that Kirby handpicked to close us out. Thank you again, Kirby. Thanks to everyone for listening. This is Chris Phillips, Boom Chuck, the Drummer's Podcast.